one is by the Human Rights Commission. And then after lunch, we will meet with the Arbitrators of South Africa. Let me start by welcoming the Commission. Since we are new, most of us, and it's for the first time that some of us are engaging with ourselves in the new administration, it would be important to start by introducing ourselves. My name is Bulelani Magwanisha. I'm from Gauteng. I'm a member of the ANC and chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services.
Richard Janji from Kongolos.
Nomathemba Maseko Jane, ANC, from Gauteng.
Good morning, Hisham Mohammed. I come from the Western Cape representing the African National Congress.
Good morning, Wilman Yehudrufin. This is not my voice you're hearing, the sign language interpreter Delphine voicing for me. I'm from ANC, also from the Western Cape. Good morning.
Good morning, I'm Glynis Bredenbach. I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, I'm Werner Rohn from the DA.
Morning, Steve Swart from the ACDP.
I'm Jacqueline Mofokeng from the ANC.
And those are the members of the committee. The chair of the Human Rights Commission, can you introduce a delegation?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Bongani Majola. I am the chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission. With me here, I have three commissioners. Next to me is Commissioner Andre Gaum, and next to him is Commissioner Mohammed Amir Mir, and on the other side is Commissioner Chris Nissen. I'd like to note an apology for him because he has an appointment with the Commissioner of Correctional Services at 11, so he may have to leave. And then on my right, we have the Chief Executive Officer of the Commission, Advocate Tipanyane. And then we have got our Parliamentary Liaison, Ms. Fadla Adam, at the extreme right.
I think, Chairperson, you can proceed by taking us through your APPs.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Justice, I bring greetings from the South African Human Rights Commission. The Commission is honored to be invited to appear before this august committee to brief its members on the work as an institution supporting constitutional democracy. The Commission would like to take this opportunity, first of all, to congratulate you, Chairperson, as well as each of the members of the committee. The Commissioners and staff look forward to working effectively with you towards dealing with some of the human rights challenges facing our people, which challenges also threaten sustainable development and our young democracy. I mention development, sustainable development, because even the UN and the African Union have declared that sustainable development is not feasible without human rights. May I just say, Chairperson, that in introducing the commissioners, I didn't introduce all the commissioners of the commission. Some are not here. with the financial constraints, the Commission has taken the view that perhaps we shouldn't bring all of them here at the same time. But I would like to say that because this is a new committee, when we are returning to the committee to report on the work that we have done, we will try to bring all the other commissioners so that they can meet the members of the committee. Chairperson, I would like to briefly touch on the mandate in my brief address, on the mandate of the Human Rights Commission. Thereafter, I propose to touch briefly on the current human rights environment and highlight some of the key challenges for the country in terms of human rights, as well as challenges for our commission. I will conclude by looking at the way forward and mention for this committee's consideration one or two ways in which the commission believes that its work can benefit from the support of this commission, of this committee, and ultimately the National Assembly, namely the issue of oversight and the issue of the amendment of putting into, sorry, the amendment of our legislation and putting into effect some of the legislation that is already done. The mandate of the Commission is found in Section 181 of the Constitution, read with Section 184 of the South African Constitution, and it is to promote respect for human rights and a culture of human rights, to promote the protection, the development, and attainment of human rights, and monitor and assess the observance of human rights in this country. This mandate is supplemented especially in Section 13 of the South African Human Rights Commission Act of 2013, which defines the powers and functions of the Commission. Among others, the section obliges the Commission to review government policies relating to human rights and may make recommendations. Section 13 also obliges the Commission to make recommendations to organs of state at all levels of government, where it considers such action advisable for the adoption of progressive measures for the promotion of human rights within the framework of the Constitution and the law, as well as appropriate measures for the further observance of such rights. The Commission must also monitor the implementation of and compliance with international and regional conventions, covenants, and charters relating to the objects of the Commission, and prepare and submit reports to this committee, to the National Assembly via this committee, pertaining to any such convention, treaty, covenant, or charter relating to the objects of the Commission. Looking back to where we started as a democratic country and reviewing our human rights trajectory, one can see that a lot of strides, a lot of work has been done towards the realization of our democratic project. A lot has been achieved to ensure, for example, access to socio-economic rights and to ensure that all the people of this country and citizens are able to exercise their civil and political rights. There are many examples, including education, where strides have been made, housing, water and sanitation, access to health, access to social security, and many other rights. This year, South Africa ratified the optional protocol to the Torture Convention, and we are now in the process of launching the National Preventive Mechanism that will be the main instrument preventing torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment or treatment. There is undeniably, otherwise, a lot of visible achievements noted in the area of human rights compared to the day South Africa switched on to democracy. However, looking forward, the road ahead of us is much longer than the road that we have already traveled during our 25 years of democracy. South Africa continues to grapple with the challenges of inequality, poverty, unemployment, and violence. The World Bank has recently classified South Africa as the most unequal society in the world, where more than half the country still lives below the national poverty line, and most of the nation's wealth remains in the hands of a small elite. The Center for Economic and Social Rights has also noted that inequality in South Africa is greater today than at the end of apartheid. The Commission monitors trends in the complaints received annually. The trends indicate the following five top categories of complaints. One, the first one is complaints relating to equality, including racism, that top the chart. Two, Section 27 rights, and those are the rights such as the right of access to health care, food, water, and social security. The third category is complaints relating to Section 35 of the Constitution, namely the rights of arrested, detained, and accused persons. The fourth one is a category of complaints relating to labor relations, and then the last one of the top five complaints that we receive annually are complaints relating to just administrative action. So the issue of inequality is most concerning because inequality is not only a threat to economic and social rights, it also threatens the realization of other forms of rights. It is therefore no surprise that the second most violated rights are the rights contained in Section 27, which are the socio-economic rights. The public healthcare system in South Africa is plagued with serious issues which have placed it on the verge of collapse. Our social security is failing the most vulnerable members of our society, the elderly and persons with disability. There are growing public concerns with basic education, part of which emanate not only from the curriculum, but also from the poor infrastructure in many schools, with some schools, especially in rural areas, using dilapidated buildings, some of which are built of mud, and constrained to make do with poor water and sanitation facilities, like pit latrines, that continue to pose health and life risks to learners. The South African Human Rights Commission has found that the aging infrastructure or poor quality thereof and systemic failures in government, in the local government sphere, are some of the obstacles hindering the improvement of access to, for example, a basic education, healthcare, safe drinking water, and adequate sanitation in the country. A number of municipalities struggle with the provision of reliable water and sanitation due to lack of capacity, the misappropriation of funds, or inadequate resources to properly operate, maintain, refurbish, and manage water and wastewater infrastructure assets, and the failure of municipalities to employ appropriately qualified technical staff. Excuse me, Chairperson. Chairperson, South Africa is facing a growing challenge of impunity for criminal conduct. This phenomenon has seen an increase in crimes of all types, such as corruption, violence, and gender-based violence, to mention a few. This, in turn, violates the other rights of ordinary law-abiding people. There is also a need to pay greater attention to members of the vulnerable groups, such as persons with disabilities, children, women, and mental health care users. It is said that there is a huge number of children of school-going age who are not schooling. There are insufficient resources and facilities for children with disabilities, as a result of which many are not attending school. There is the need for the government to reflect on the most appropriate way to ensure children's rights in line with Section 28(2). Of the Constitution, which demands that the best interests of a child are of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child. Perhaps the idea of a multi-party children's caucus should also be given some thought, is my question. While more people are becoming aware of their rights, there is still a mass of people who seem not to understand that the exercise of a right must be accompanied with responsibilities. We have seen self-delivery protests become increasingly violent, with protesters burning schools and hospitals or digging up and destroying sections of roads in the process of exercising their right to assemble, demonstrate, picket and petition. The media reports today a community in Zebediela in Limpopo that has vowed to continue preventing children in the area from going to school, and that learners have been so prevented for 3 months already because they are demanding that a road or roads be tarred. This is a very serious challenge in the country, which also challenges us as the Commission to find ways of conveying the message to our people that the rights that they enjoy in terms of the Bill of Rights come also with responsibilities. Some of the challenges faced by the Commission itself relate to the problem of limited resources. I mentioned at the beginning of my brief address that not all commissioners could come here because of the reduction of the resources that the commission is receiving. There is also the lack of implementation of the recommendations and directives of the commission by the executive at all levels of government. Many recommendations of the Commission have not yet been implemented by the executive at different levels of government. There are recommendations that were made, for example, as long ago as 2008, which are still not being attended to. And the problem thereof, Chairperson, is that because the members of the community keep coming to the Commission, we spend more resources now having to revisit matters that had already been visited and recommendations made to government, and government did not object to those recommendations or even accepted them at some stage, you know, but no action was done. So the resources, the limited resources that we get have to be utilized again, you know, to do something that had already been done. And we then get people being frustrated and toying and banning schools and what have you, whereas if these recommendations had been attended to, either rejected so that we reformulate them differently or accepted and then implemented, then perhaps we could use the money to do other things. MEC Lesufi said the other day that he was not going to rebuild the school in Gatleho, because there are many others who need the schools. The implementation of and compliance with these recommendations would go a long way in reducing or even removing many of the challenges that have been referred to above, some of which have driven service delivery protesters to picket and even damage public assets like schools and clinics. The Commission appeals for the support of the National Assembly in this regard. Section 181(3) of the Constitution and Sections 4(2) and Section 13(4) of the South African Human Rights Act oblige state organs, including the executive, to cooperate and assist the Commission in the execution of its mandate. On the other hand, Section 55(2) of the Constitution obliges the National Assembly to maintain oversight over the exercise of the National Executive Authority. In its EFF judgment of 2016, the Constitutional Court said that the National Assembly and, by extension, Parliament bears the responsibility to play an oversight role over the executive and state organs and ensure that constitutional and statutory obligations are properly executed. On the way forward, we think that more needs to be done to reflect the fact that our democracy has matured in the 25 years of its existence. We cannot live in a society where 3% of the national households still have to fetch water from rivers and streams, where our children are falling into pit latrines at schools, or have dilapidated buildings collapsing on them. Our people deserve better, and we feel we should do better. We can do better by working together to ensure that the rights contained in the Bill of Rights are realized for the benefit of all in this country and for the sake of our own democracy. The South African Human Rights Commission has embarked on a number of initiatives aimed at promoting and protecting human rights. These days, there isn't a day that passes without the media talking about what the Human Rights Commission is doing. It's fully aware that it alone, however, will not achieve much. We think that our stated objective of working collaboratively with all spheres of government, civil society and other stakeholders will go a long way towards the realization of the rights mentioned above, the more so when also reinforced with the oversight over the executive. The legislative framework, and this is my last point, Chairperson, the legislative framework within which the Commission operates is restrictive in a number of ways. We believe that we can do more if it is attended to. There is therefore an urgent need for Parliament to consider legislative modifications to enable the Commission to be more effective. For example, Section 15(2)(b)(1) of the South African Human Rights Commission Act restricts the independence of the Commission as provided for in Section 181(2) of the Constitution, in that some of the things we need to do, we have to go to the National Prosecuting Authority to ask for their permission, and that is contrary to a sense of independence. And lots of delays result as a result of the letters going up and down and so on. Besides, if you look at the other Chapter 9 institutions, if you look at their legislation, there isn't this restrictive provision that you can't do this unless you go to some DPP and ask for permission and put a motivation. They are busy in court. There are a number of other provisions that require attention. The promulgation of aspects of the Protection of Personal Information Act will enable the Commission to hand over the administration of the Promotion of Access to Information Act to the information regulator who has been established. Now, we are carrying that burden, but Treasury tells us that we cannot get money for it because they say, but that is the job of the information regulator. And the information regulator says we cannot take it over until legislation is whatever. So we have then to take from the very limited resources in order to, you know, and so we're carrying, and we have one person, we cannot afford more than one person. The putting into operation of the remaining sections of the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, PEPUDA, the Equality Act, will enable the Commission to deal more effectively with the problems of inequality in the country. I have already highlighted that complaints on equality top the charts. The Commission would like to appeal for the support of the honorable members of the committee with regard to these pieces of legislation. Before the expiry of the term of the fifth Parliament, the Commission had already initiated discussions with the Department of Justice in this regard to meet, and we are in the process to try and meet the Minister of Justice under this Parliament to further pursue the matter. Finally, Chairperson, honorable members, I wish to convey our gratitude for this opportunity to address the Portfolio Committee and to wish you, all of you, well in your difficult task. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for your words of congratulations, and we wish the same for you and the commissioners and the whole commission. Can I now take the opportunity to allow the CEO to take us through the APPs?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, as well as my commissioners and my colleague on the right. Thanks again for the opportunity to come and share with yourself what is. So to actually build on the chairperson's opening remarks. Can you take us to? Yeah. Okay. So, honourable members, in view of our constitutional mandate and the vision of the Commission as outlined in page 5 of the main document and our mission and values, the Commission, in order to fulfill its mandate, has come up with what we regard as three outcome-oriented goals. This is what we're told we must structure our strategic plan by Treasury. So we have three outcome-oriented goals. Goal number one basically is to enhance the organizational base so that, you know, from an administrative point of view, we can then provide support to the mandate of the Human Rights Commission. So we need to strengthen that. That's basically our base, that's our foundation, without which then, you know, we cannot do much. So we need to strengthen that quite a lot. Second one, second goal is basically our link to our mandate to promote a sustainable culture of human rights in the country, encompassing the three mandates, the promotion, the protection, and the monitoring, which is basically the observance of human rights in the country. And then the third goal is basically coming again mainly from our Section 13 of our Act to play a leading role in international and regional human rights matters. So this is what basically the goals which then inform entire strat plan as well as the entire annual performance plan of the Commission. Now, next page. Okay. Now, again, in view of what the chairperson has highlighted, we've also identified what we call overarching thematic areas, which should inform the work of the Commission in terms of its constitutional mandate. And we've identified issues of poverty, unemployment, inequality, and violence. Now, these are issues which, you know, if we as the Human Rights Commission do not make a contribution in addressing, will not be doing very well in terms of the realization of that mandate. So what this means is that all the activities of the Commission should basically be informed by this overarching thematic areas. Then this is then followed by what we now call priority areas, which we think also the Commission should focus a lot more. Again, informed by the overarching thematic areas. So issues of business and human rights are quite important. The Human Rights Commission, unlike other Chapter 9 institutions, most Chapter 9 institutions, its mandate cuts across public and private. Public Protector focuses more on public. We cut across. And therefore, we have observed after many years that we've not really done very well in addressing human rights violations in the private sector. And we do need to, you know, pull up our socks. So this is actually now one of the priorities areas for the Commission in this coming year. And I think you've already seen a couple of activities of the Commission which linked to these issues of business and human rights. For example, last year when with the H&M saga about the coolest monkey in town, basically summoned H&M to come and explain itself and get it to apologize. So we'll be intensifying our work around business and human rights. The second one is corruption and human rights. Again, you know, looking at the Zondo Commission and many other issues, reports of the AG, clearly corruption is undermining the ability of this country and the Commission to advance human rights. We are doing an inquiry in Vaal River, in the Vaal area, where a number of municipalities are dumping raw sewage into the Vaal River. And when we do our preliminary investigations, what we'll find that some of the money has been sent to the vendor bank, and therefore the municipalities don't have money to treat raw sewage, and we're dumping this in Vaal River and destroying the Vaal River. So that investigation is going on, and hopefully very soon we'll issue a report on that. The third issue is issue of violence against vulnerable groups. Definitely violence in all its forms constitutes one of the major violations of human rights in the country. And again, for a long time, there will be 25 years, honorable members, next year. And for a long time, we've not really focused a lot on issues of violence, issues of crime, issues of human trafficking and stuff like that. So again, this is one area which we also think the commission should be doing a lot more around issues of violence. For example, in Western Cape, we are quite concerned about the phenomena of gang violence, which clearly is not being resolved adequately. And those are some of the things which we are looking at. We're also doing a lot more work now on trafficking in persons. A lot of South Africans are victims of trafficking internally as well as outside the country. And again, we, as a preeminent human rights body, we cannot fold our arms and keep quiet and do nothing about that. And the fourth one is issues of equality and social cohesion. The chairperson has already alluded to this. And we're very clear, 25 years later, with the high levels of inequality, if these are not addressed, this actually constitutes a threat to consumer democracy. And we, as with our chapter institutions, have been established to strengthen consumer democracy. And we cannot, therefore, ignore the issues of looming and increasing inequalities in our country in terms of class, in terms of race, and in terms of gender, and many other issues. So we'll also be putting a lot more work on this. The fourth one, the whole issue of protests, local government, and service delivery. Some people say South Africa is now the protest kingdom in the world. We have over 14,000 protests a year. The police annual reports do highlight that actually in the last 3 years or so, we have seen an increase in the number of violent protests, which also then undermines the rule of law, undermines human rights issues, and therefore those are issues which we have to address. The AG's report recently again highlighted the problems around local government, which again we feel as a commission we should also put more emphasis on that, together of course with issues of service delivery. Now the other priority for the commission is the whole issue of, we know we are working in a very challenged environment in terms of resources, in terms of many other human rights violations. And therefore, we are trying to move away, from a quantitative approach to a qualitative approach. We're a very small organization, and therefore we need to make sure that, the work we do has a higher impact, and we also become more innovative in how we do our work, but also we collaborate, as the chairperson was saying, that with all other relevant stakeholders in pursuit of a better South Africa. So again, there's a new thinking the commission has to, we need to do this. We're a very small organization, as you'll see later on. We only have a budget of 189 million rands, and we have a whole country to assist, 57 million. So we cannot be at every corner, every street in this country. So we need to think differently and do things differently. So those are some of the things we'll be focusing on in terms of our strategic plan. The document, the main document, highlights, breaks down some of these things which we'll be working on. Page 21, page 23, speaks to this. Then I'll quickly then, Chair, move to our annual performance plan. Now, basically, this is to give effect to all the issues I've mentioned earlier on about our thematic priorities, and mandates, and stuff like that. So under our performance plan, we have divided this again into a number of programs. So we have basically four programs which are in the commission which will deal with this. So the first slide we have there basically deals with what we'll call the mandate program. These are, the human rights issues. Program one, basically, which will come at the next page, deals with strengthening our infrastructure to help us to fulfill our mandate. But the page we are looking at now basically highlights some of the activities we'll be doing under Program 2, 3, and 4, which is our constitutional mandate. So we'll definitely be doing a lot more around issues of human rights education and awareness at schools. We actually have, I'll just jump the gun a little bit to say we'll be working with the department, we're actually working with the Department of Basic Education and Justice in the school moot court competition, where all grade 10s and 11s now, as part of the English curriculum, do a compulsory human rights essay competition. And then we are part of that, and we are, as from this year going forward, because we are quite aware that, you know, the children are the future of our country. And if we basically help to ensure that we instill a culture of human rights at that early age, we'll be doing our country a great service. If you look at the crime stats, honorable members, we realize that much of our crimes in this country and the victims of crime is young people. And therefore, if we were to basically address this issue at an early age, so we're actually quite happy that we are working with the Department of Basic Education in all schools in this country, all public schools, to basically instill a culture of human rights. We're also working with other organizations around schools and human rights issues. Then we'll also be hosting human rights dialogues across the country. You know, as the chair has pointed out, that you know the respect for the rule of law. If you look at the crime stats, you know, you might actually think we have declared a war against women in terms of sexual violence against women. So we really need to reverse this. We need to get South Africans to respect the rights of other South Africans, the spirit of Ubuntu. Clearly, there's something wrong in the last 25 years where we see this high number of violence against women and children in our country. It's clearly worrying. And therefore, what does it say then about us establishing a culture of human rights in our country? And then we'll also be intensifying our work again around issues of media. Media gives us much greater leverage than we would normally do under with other resources. It means we'll have to have more workshops, which we don't have money for, but if we use the media in a very smart manner, all media, community radio stations, print media, electronic media, then we'll be doing quite well. Chair, may be allowed, when we present our annual report, you'll actually see that the last financial year, the Human Rights Commission raised an equivalent of 250 million in media, and we reached 3 billion people in this country through media, Twitter, and whatever, but that will come much later. But we need to intensify that so that, you know, we do actually make a better contribution in the establishment of a culture of human rights in our country. Then the fourth point is really about our protection mandate. It's a very powerful mandate where we basically receive complaints from members of the public and address those human rights violations. Last financial year, we have received about 10,000 complaints. But Section 13 also is very clear that the Human Rights Commission can also deal with human rights violations at its own instance without waiting for complaints. And we need to focus on that a bit more. And then, but also, you know, find a way of using this mandate much more effectively. 10,000 complaints, what is the impact of that if human rights violations still continue? So again, there's a lot of thinking around that. And of course, one of the issues which might be seen as controversial in some sectors is that when we make findings on human rights violations, those findings are binding. Maybe that will help. As you'll see when we come back again, that we are also litigating a lot more on human rights issues. And I think honorable members are quite aware of the number of matters which the Human Rights Commission has taken to court and the number of findings around human rights violations. Some controversial, but all in the spirit of creating this culture. And then the other issue, Chair, it's next page. the chair has already mentioned the need for us also to make sure that, you know, our recommendations are implemented. That has been one of the weaknesses in the past, where we make lots of reports with lots of recommendations, but we're not sufficiently following them up. Now we are much more determined that we must follow up our recommendations. Otherwise, it might be seen as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure in some quarters, that you just make recommendations and then you don't care as to what happens. Then the other activity is again reporting on the state of human rights. Again, there's a point which the chairperson was also raising, that in terms of the Quality Act, we are supposed to develop a quality report on the state of gender, disability, and racism, and other issues. That section has not yet come into operation since the Quality Act was passed in 2000. But we still do a report, Chair, under our broader mandate on the state of human rights. And I think that report also needs to be more advanced, so that we give a better picture in the country of what is the state of human rights, and what are the challenges, and what needs to be done. And then the seventh activity, the whole issue of the NPM, we'll be launching this on the 19th Commission meeting. It's a very important new mandate for the Human Rights Commission, and we appreciate the work done by members of Parliament in getting government to ratify this protocol. Under this mandate, the Human Rights Commission will be coordinating what is called the National Preventive Mechanism, as well as, you know, actively implementing this mechanism. And under this mandate, we are required to monitor all detention centers in this country, police, cells, prison, psychiatric hospitals, military prisons, and stuff like that, and submit a report annually to the UN, the special, what do you call it, subcommittee on the prevention of torture, on the recommendations which we have made and the extent to which those recommendations have been made. Chairperson, this is a very important mandate. If you look at the police annual reports, we are spending a lot of money, wasted money in that matter, in civil claims, where, you know, there's abuse of people who are in detention. In May, we were in Geneva before the Committee Against Torture, where South Africa was presenting its report. It is actually quite sad when the report mentioned that, you know, there were over 200 incidents of torture in our police cells and about 100 rapes committed in police cells. And what does it say about the country which is committed to human rights? What does it say about Section 12 of our Constitution, which says no one should be tortured? And then if you add the number of abuses which happens on a daily basis in our prisons, clearly we'll be wasting a lot of more money in defending this claim. So this mechanism is there to help the state to ensure that we minimize torture in our country, we minimize cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment and treatment which happens day in, day out in our country. It's a very important mandate, and we'll try and make sure that we do succeed. There are only about 87 countries in the world which have this mandate. And then the eighth one is the whole issue of the monitoring of the Convention on the Rights of People with Disability. This convention requires the Human Rights Commission to monitor the extent to which this convention is being implemented in our country, to address the plight of thousands of our people with disabilities in our country. And it's still a major challenge. This year, KTC of the EU will be doing a study tour in, I think, four countries in Europe in order to be able to set up a proper monitoring unit. So, for example, you know, if you use a taxi in our country and you are disabled, you can imagine what this means to you as a South African with rights. Most of our taxis do not cater for people with disabilities. Most of our schools in rural areas do not cater for persons with disabilities. So those are issues which we have to address as a country, and the Commission will be playing a major role. We'll be having discussions with the Minister relevant ministers around these issues to make sure that we really address the plight of persons with disabilities. And then the other program is the one dealing with the whole issue of the infrastructure of the commission, that we need to put a lot more effort again in ensuring that, you know, the administrative support of the commission is up to scratch to ensure that then we're able to fulfill this mandate. The whole issue of ITC is very important. There's also talk of the fourth industrial revolution. So how do we use new technologies to advance human rights? At this point in time, you can imagine, honorable members, if we get about 10,000 complaints in a year, and we have over 50 million South Africans, how do the rest of the country bring forward their complaints on human rights violations if we cannot be at every corner of the street, at every corner in this country? So those are some of the issues which we need to address. We also need to address issues of human resources. We still believe happy workers make the most effective workers, and we need to address that, as well as the issues of funding. So, Chair, I'll move quickly then to the budget. Left is 10 minutes. For 2019, honorable members, our budget, due to the current economic challenges, was cut from the original amount which were initially told by Treasury of 193 to 189. So this is what we're having for 2019-2020. And then, so this is definitely has had challenges in the Commission, and we've had to do a whole lot of things in order to manage this, and of course being more innovative. But also, if you look at point number four, we've also had to do a couple of things. We've had to freeze posts in order to stay within the budget. I think we've frozen about 10 posts. And we also have to review our organizational structure to make it more effective. You know, as the chair has pointed out, that unfortunately we couldn't even bring all the commissioners to this first meeting with the new committee. We've also had to, at 4.C, to sublet the whole floor of our building to the information regulator to save some money. But it's also good in the sense that we're now working much more closer with the information regulator, who will be taking over our PAIA mandate. The next page basically gives a breakdown for our 2019-2020 budget. If you look at pages 8, 9, and 10 of our main document, we also give information about the previous financial years as it stands. And that's how it's broken down. Then if I go to the next page, which basically speaks to the breakdown. So as you can see, under point 1, 69% of our budget is allocated to personnel costs. It has been reduced from 72%. There has been lots of discussions around this point. Treasury was saying, well, you know, due to financial challenges, we should try and reduce this to 55%. But at the same time, we are saying that, you know, much of the work of the Human Rights Commission is done by warm bodies. You know, I'd said last time that, you know, if you were to imagine the commission being bafana, at least now they've won, that the bulk of your money is going towards the players who are scoring goals and defending goals. So much of the work of the Human Rights Commission is done by human beings, not machines. We're not yet there at the tail end of the fourth industrial revolution, where we might be using robots to deal with human rights violations and complaints. So we still need warm bodies. So we're not agreeing with the 55% target by Treasury, but we're also at the same time looking inwardly to see, you know, how do we readjust in order to live within the means which we have. So we did take a cut, and to avoid retrenching staff members, we simply froze posts and asked staff members to double up. And And then at page two, at point two, then also indicates then where the other budget goes to towards corporate support services, IT, AG fees. So we only have, at point number three, only 7% of our budget is actually allocated to corp operations. But now, as I'm saying, then this might be misleading, because actually the work of the commission is done at 69% of our budget, that is staff members. So this 7% basically will refer to things like organizing workshops, you know, catering for activities, paying lawyers for investigation, stuff like that. So we need to be very clear that the bulk of the Human Rights Commission is actually for operations, even though, of course, in terms of treasury, that operation will not be seen as human resources. It will be seen as paying lawyers, paying for consultants, renting rates and stuff like that. So we just need to get a different perspective towards this. Then the next page, again, just gives you further breakdowns of how the budget is allocated according to different programs of the commission. Basically, this program one is the supporting the infrastructure of the commission, finance, human resources, supply chain, the CEO's office as well. Next page is program two, which deals with the protection mandate. We also have commissioners there, human rights advocacy, our nine provincial offices. And then the next one deals with the program three, which is largely our protection mandate. And then the last slide is our monitoring and, the observance, monitoring of the observance of human rights program. Chair, with that, that's our presentation. Thanks for your patience and for listening.
Thank you very much, CEO. Let me also welcome Honorable Mofokeng, who joined us from another portfolio committee that sat earlier on of police. Honorable Mofokeng, you're welcome. And it was just a courtesy visit because he's going again. Okay, that's fine. Honorable members, here is the presentation by the Human Rights Commission. If we can engage with it in the form of questions, inputs, opinions, and suggestions. Honorable Hisham Mohammed, Honorable Swart, Honorable Horn, Honorable Nivot Tachen, in that order, Honorable Kola, Honorable Masako Jele, in that order.
Thank you very much, Jay, if I may proceed. Thank you, Professor Mojola, and also Advocate Chipeanayani for their informative presentations on your operations and your objectives and mandate in particular. Just a cursory look at some of the reports. This is, of course, our first engagement. And human rights, of course, is deeply rooted in our conscience as every South African citizen. In fact, as you pointed out daily in our constitutional state, access to enforcing the rights is a challenge. It will remain so for a foreseeable future. But looking at some of the issues you raised in the challenges, the funding opportunities caught my eye, and that is to explore possible funding opportunities that will not compromise your independence that you ventured in some time ago. If I look at the programs, however, of your budget, or rather of your stress plan, the promotion of human rights is one of the programs. I noticed the allocation It's about 97 million rand. And the protection of human rights, just over a million. Now, in exploring possible funding areas which wouldn't compromise your independence, of course, with regard to the promotion of human rights, which I see is a major part of your allocation estimate, has there been any exploration of where you don't deal with protection or litigation or investigation, but rather promotion with the private sector and public sector partnership with departments? And if so, to what degree has that happened? Or does it, or am I reading it wrong in terms of that particular allocation? That's in promotion in the young 25 years that we have. Even more pertinent than ever now. Promotion is important, but we can't obviously abdicate the responsibilities of South Africans, the community, meaning the private sector and public sector. Then secondly, on the unfunded mandates in monitoring court orders, which affects your work obviously in the rest of the state, I would say, we would be interested to know how the Commission, or rather the Commission, plans to manage the obligations imposed by the court, given that you didn't get a funding from the Treasury over this budget period coming. Thirdly, just quickly on the issue of, you already answered the PIA responsibilities to the information regulator in the progress. It seems you stuck somewhere in Treasury and in Fire, but what is there the latest update on that? But we would be interested. And then I see one of the promotional areas of equality courts, as we all know, hasn't been, shall I venture to say, effectively utilized. Has there been discussion with the NEC, that's the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee chaired by the Chief Justice, how best, we know that the Justice Department have declared every court a sitting, as a place of sitting for equality courts, but the utilization thereof seems to be, eventually, we know you have held workshops over the years, not necessarily awareness, but clients or citizens getting effectiveness in terms of partnership between yourself and the Department of Justice. And, yeah, those are the four areas, Chair. Then lastly, obviously, coming from the Western Cape, although we're discussing it national, I see systematic violence investigation. You intend doing this particular investigation. Maybe you want to elaborate just the mechanics of that and the objectives in particular. Is there terms of reference to this systemic violence investigation that you envisage to hold? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair, for the report and the hard work that has been done under very difficult circumstances, particularly relating to your budget. Some of the perennial issues that come up and that this new parliament and this new committee will need to deal with relate to the complaints of non-compliance with remedial action or implementation by departments, non-compliance with PIA and those issues. And so, Chair, I'd like, our previous parliament suggested a mechanism with the Office for Support of Democratic Institutions in the Speaker's office. That recommendation we need to follow up so that we can exercise in our oversight over those departments, assist the Human Rights Commission. You remember, Chair, when you were still with Justice, we were having this problem. It's still ongoing. It's a still ongoing problem, non-compliance. Bearing in mind your recommendations are not binding, but still there must be some form of implementation. So I would suggest maybe prepare a list. Give us a list of the recommendations where you refer to lack of implementation of recommendations by the executive at all levels over the years. And I see that you've only been monitoring implementation since 2016-17. And maybe we can start looking into that. The list in general, your general reports, and then your PIA reports. I think that is something that we can assist you with. Secondly, I appreciate the priority areas. I think we all are massively concerned about the high levels of crime in our nation. Besides the corruption and state capture, just straightforward crime is a massive concern. And so thank you for your attention that you also given to that. Because when we see crime, it affects our basic human rights in a very significant way. And we had the NPA yesterday saying that crime is going through the roof. Now, if the NPA admits that, then we do understand that it's an issue for us to take hands with. Thank you also for your attention to social cohesion. Social cohesion. That you can play a crucial role together with us in just having a sense of unity in our nation, particularly given racial utterances, racial statements and things like that. The issue of unfunded mandates, as my colleague referred to, monitoring obligations in terms of various court orders. I'm not sure if you are participating in that litigation or is it hindsight, because maybe at the time those orders are given to compel, to request you to monitor, you need to give an indication to court of your financial constraints. Because these are vast monitoring obligations that are placed upon you. And it is very difficult given that you've got very limited resources. Could I just ask then one or two other issues, the issue relating to the Life Isidimeni matter and the report that you are preparing. Are you also involved in any other litigation on behalf of those families that suffered as a result of that tragedy? Again, subject to financial constraints, but we would like to, and that report was March this year, I think, if I remember. We should have insight into that report. I think it would be very helpful as well into that whole area of things. Lastly, Chair, just an issue which is of particular interest to me is the trafficking in persons, and thank you for highlighting that issue as well. It is an issue which we need to also look at in our oversight capacities. But from our side, we appreciate the good work that you do with very limited finances. We have tried in the previous parliament in our resolutions to try to argue for increased budgets. We've got to continue doing that, Chair. We've got to continue doing that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Han.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, the duties the Human Rights Commission has now taken up in terms of the national preventative mechanism on the optional protocol, and I don't know whether that is why the Commissioner Nissen is meeting with the correctional services today, but it could be helpful to understand or to hear just what progress has been made up to date to thrash out a protocol or for operations in terms of visits to detention centres, etc., if any. Then, Jay, in respect of the broad mandate of the Commission, on this past Sunday, the 8th, the City Press had an interesting article regarding a medical student at Wits University, which has laid a complaint with the Human Rights Commission after she failed and was not readmitted, and saying now this is a discriminatory practice given the fact that she comes from a disadvantaged background. Now, the part that drew my attention was the fact that the university, apparently, if you could believe the City Press report, has now questioned the authority of the Human Rights Commission to get involved. So in respect of mandates, etc., I would like to know whether the Commission has applied their minds. The university says, but we have the Council for Higher Education, which is overseeing us, and any any matter that might be of relevance regarding the way we handle academic standards and the way we apply our policies, they're in charge of. So it would be good to hear whether the Commission has applied their minds and has answered, and if so, how. And then my third and last issue I want to raise with the Commission is on the whole issue, I think it's contained in their goal 2, the promotion of what they call a sustainable culture of human rights through promotion, monitoring, and protection. And the reason why I quote this goal is that if one then reflects on what a culture of human rights entails, my very basic research tells me that it's a culture in which people actively and positively reflect on fundamental rights like dignity, equality, and freedom. But then what the academics also tells us is that there is, in respect of a human rights culture, one must clearly distinguish between the human rights law and the way it has a vertical application. So when human rights are transgressed, then the law comes into play, but that the culture rather has a horizontal operation. So sociologists, for example, would say it's a structure of feeling, a socially constructed sympathy, a habit of the heart. I think ultimately we can encapsulate or sum it up by way of saying this is a culture of tolerance. And why I've premised all of this is now to take up with the Commission the report they released or the announcement they made towards the end of March in respect of the statement by the leader of the EFF of which they received complaints and the relevant statement, I think, which is still, I think, aggrieving people out there, was that he at some stage said that he is not calling for the slaughter of white people in South Africa, at least not for now. And then the Commission came out towards the end of March and said, but technically this is not hate speech, and it might be offensive, but we can't find that this is hate speech. Now, what I want to take up is not necessarily to disagree with the defining regarding the application of the law, but I want to go back to saying that if one talks about a culture of human rights, it's not all about the law. And if the Commission has, in terms of their own stated goals, of one of their tasks is to promote this culture of tolerance in South Africa, I want to ask whether they are satisfied that they have, in terms of the way they've structured this finding by just sticking to the technicalities of the law, whether they've met that goal of promoting and protecting a culture of human rights. So to my mind, even though, as I say, I'm not taking to task the finding regarding what the law says, I want to argue that the way I see it, and I think the way many South Africans see it, the Human Rights Commission has here missed an opportunity to promote that culture of human rights, to say to a political leader, yes, you've couched your words in a careful manner not to fall foul of the law, but we want to protect and promote a culture of human rights, and you have missed that mark, and we call on you not to act in a way which can be seen to incite hatred, possibly even violence. So I want to get the Human Rights Commission's comments on this as to whether they feel that it was good enough just to stick to the technicalities of the law, and whether they didn't have a duty to assist South Africa in a broader way. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mola. Honorable Nevoet Drogen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Human Rights Commission for your presentation. Firstly, I would like to ask the chairperson, your original overview, if we can get a copy of that via the secretary of the committee, please, because the summary in the presentation is very limited, and you said more than what is said in the presentation, so I'd like a copy of the detail that you presented, please. And then secondly, I see each commissioner has a focus area. So, for example, the chairperson focuses on healthcare, the deputy chairperson equality and social cohesion. I'm new in this specific committee, so I would like more detail of what is or was done for each sector and the issues arising from those sectors in your studies or your research or whatever the case may be, and the results and what you would like to see being implemented on each area. So just some more detail, if you don't mind. And then relating to the school curriculum and the Commission's work with the Department of Basic Education, I had a question there, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is in the curriculum, or what feedback do you give into that curriculum? The reason why I'm asking this is the children in the special schools, disabled children, they face a lot of discrimination even inside the schools itself. Maybe it be it from the teachers, or the words that the teachers tell the children is discriminatory in terms of their human rights. Now, because they are disabled children, they can't voice out that their human rights are being infringed. So now, what does the Human Rights Commission do in the work with the Department of Basic Education? So that's my first question. And then secondly, the CEO said the Human Rights Commission is a little bit different from other Chapter 9 institutions in that you work with both the public and the private sector. But you also said in the schools you only work with the public schools. So now, why is that the case? Because I believe you should also work with the private schools, because you will find human rights violations coming out there too, because they're not open-minded and sensitive towards human rights and the human rights culture and environment. So why are you not working with both and only just the public schools? So just to point that out, because you also said that you're different from other Chapter 9 institutions. You work with public and private. In your presentation, you also said you presented with regards to the UN police work, the 200, I lost my papers now, but the 200 cases of tortures in the police and rapes of the detention centers. Now, after that presentation at the UN, how does the Human Rights Commission work with the police sector so that we can resolve those issues and address that and reduce the number of cases of tortures or rapes in prisons? And I'm very happy to see the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. I was aware that the Human Rights Commission were involved because I'm very concerned that people forget that our government signed, Parliament ratified this convention. Now, just to give an example, NGOs working with government officials, for example, Department of Social Development in the provincial or local government sphere, the staff there don't know that we ratified this convention. Now, the staff there do not know what is contained in the convention to prevent discrimination against people with disabilities. So National has it in their business plans, their budgets, etc., but the provincial and the local spheres don't. So much so that NGOs or the disability sector needs to come and educate the departmental staff on those levels. So I'm wondering, what does the Human Rights Commission do to make sure that even government officials continue and remember and know exactly what's in the convention that we ratified in 2007 in Parliament. I mean, that's what, how many years? 12 years ago. So that we don't forget and slowly forget when we all conveniently forget that we have to look after people with disabilities. We can't torture them. We mustn't discriminate against them. So we need to keep the convention alive in our minds, basically. So what is the work that the Human Rights Commission does to assist in that? Thank you, Chair.
Commission, I think some of the questions here are very detailed, and they need detailed responses. So in areas where you feel that you might need to write back to us because of the amount of information that is being requested, please indicate. Honorable Maseko Jele.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's because we are sharing it, Jefferson. So now, yes. Okay, thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank the Chairperson also for the presentation and the Commissioner. Mine is just a small one. I wanted to find out, because from the presentation you could hear that there's a serious issues of budget constraints, and there are a lot of some proposals that the Commission would like to have. For example, the issues of monitoring, strengthening monitoring systems, and then also monitoring on the matters of disability. I'm interested to find out exactly how are you going to cope in terms of making sure that you continue coming with this, implementing such proposals, and including also the issue of previously there was a proposal of the usage of ICT in terms of enhancing your work, on particularly on the issues of education. So also that one, if maybe you can give us an more information on those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mwana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think a lot has been said already by the previous speakers. But I think, Chair, part of what we must note that was raised by the Commission is that there is a dire need for a legislative development so as to help the Commission to work effectively and efficiently. I think we must note it, Chair, the committee, so that when we have ample time, we must look into this. I'm sure this is not the first and the last time we're meeting the Commission. So we are surely going to have time to deal with such issues. There is another thing, Chair, that I think is very important the Commission is raising, which of a rising revolution of public protests, which may be a cause for the country's instability, equally may be a signal of some spheres of government weaknesses. But I think what is more important was, if you analyze closely the protests, it's about schools, which is education, which is provided in the SOM Constitution as an obligation of government to ensure that we provide quality education to the citizens. The second common issue, Chair, is houses, which is the same human segment that is espoused by the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, water and other relative matters. So it tells that there is a role as well that the commission must play in terms of ensuring that there is synergy between the government spheres that are supposed to deliver to these constitutional promises and their work as to promote human rights. Well, I believe, Chair, human rights are meant for the human species. So when you go to, when you check government spheres or institutions, they remain juristic persons. So if the commission may be within, of course, the legal framework they are operating under, may find a way of bringing a synergy between our people and government institutions when it relates to these public protests. Another thing, Chair, that I would like to raise, in particular with the commission, that we have a department called Correctional Services within our portfolio, whose fundamental rights are mostly encapsulated by Section 35. But when you see reports and stories, we see that there is a fundamental contravention of human rights within our correctional centers, which I think the commission, if they can actually work closely with that, but with the DCS, to ensure that we curb and reduce contraventions within the government correctional centers. Lastly, Chair, there is a common presentation I've noted since we have started work of budget constraints. Whatever institute that comes here to present, there is always that English word called the budget constraints. I think the committee must note, Chair, with the view of trying to see how best can we be of assistance to these entities that fall within our jurisdiction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me also welcome Honorable Molaute, who has just joined us. He started in another meeting, in another committee. We want to welcome you, sir. Over to you, Commission. Honorable Mohammed had asked for a 1 minute intervention.
Yeah, Chair, my apologies, sir. Just a small part that I forgot to ask, which I jotted down earlier this morning. Just on the effect of the Human Rights Commission findings and their binding status, what is the view of the Commission at this stage? And as well as the, when you make recommendations, I haven't seen this in the report, but the responsiveness, because one understands that your recommendations probably affect multiple institutions, organizations, and departments itself. What's the mechanism for feedback to that effect? Then lastly, just we have seen in the newspapers this morning that one of your commissioners, Ms. Nissen, has engaged the City of Cape Town, which is great with regard to the administration of the city exercising or over-exercising the governance processes, which may in fact trample on people's human rights. Are you investigating that formally? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder whether perhaps we may get some 5 minutes so that we can sift out all the questions that we can handle now and identify questions that we will write to so that we do not, you know, waste time. If it's not possible, we'll then try to simply just go on. But
can you adjourn for 5 minutes? We'll come back at 5:30.
the first day. Okay. So, yeah, let's come. Yeah, no, that's fine. I think, okay.